Hello, everybody. This is the new episode of Literaturnacht. And I have now a guest from France, Louven, and an author from France living in Germany, and Eike. And we will talk about the French science fiction scene. And maybe we come to compare a little bit the German scene and the French scene, because there are some things that are quite different. And we will bombard Louven with our questions. But first, it would be nice, my guests, if you introduce yourself, maybe Louven first.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for your curiosity, because we are neighbors and we, like we say, we never really know our neighbors. And I live in Munich, and I felt for a while quite isolated in terms of science fiction, and I found more or less some crowd, and I'm entering this continent that is the science fiction in Germany very timidly. I'm a neurodivergent person, and so it's really demanding for me to go out and to meet even other geeks. So I'm still in the process of taming this new environment. So what to know about me? I'm born in the old century, 75, to be after the so-called sexual revolution. I've been writing since, I think, forever, of course, like most of the writers will tell you. And I'm published since 2001, and my first publication was a science fiction novella that was commissioned to me by a philosophy teacher, Claude Rolls, who was at the time the head of a new and very short-lived collection of science and fiction books united by theme. Like, we were in team. There was one science theme or society theme, and my theme was genetic things. Like, it was like the genetic whatever was very big in terms of, like, it was like the artificial intelligence of the 2000s. Everybody was panicking about everything genetic engineering, and so a lot of questions. And already at that moment, the French publishing world and institutional world asked for inputs from writers. That's quite interesting, because I think it's exactly what's happening now with artificial intelligence, but with everything, basically. We are constantly in France since, I think, it's been, I'm still entering the subject. Oh my God, this is what I'm doing. I'm digressing a lot. But we can talk about it later. But it's like, my feeling is that since like the 20 last years, and very recently, especially since the pandemics and a bit before, we are constantly asked for our statement on basically everything. Let's ask the science fiction writers. Like, we feel a lot like we are like old, wise women. And most of the time, I have no idea. I'm not a seer. I cannot see the future. I just, and it's really a bit painful, actually, but it's really linked to the state of the politics in France, I suppose, where you have to put order in sense in a political landscape that has none. So probably it's even healthy, probably. I'm complaining because most of the time I don't know what to say. Like, can you tell us about the mobility in the future? I have no idea. My guess is, I don't have any guess. I would love that people would walk more and, you know, take the bikes, but maybe it's not what will happen. So, yeah, so that's quite interesting, because my first appearance in the publishing world was already an anticipation novella, speculating on genetic engineering. And now that I think of this novella, I read it recently, and everything was in place. Like, everything that would become my style or my drive, more than style, was there. Like, it's very poetic. It tries to understand things via language. It tries to put characters in a weird situation, like a situation that is not our everyday one. And I trust the process and I trust the characters to try to find their bearings and understanding them, just like not a bit like entomologist watching ants. I think the process of creating fiction helps the way that the characters evolves in that situation. I put them very cruelly in, is giving me insight on the situation, but no conclusion, but at least an insight. So that was my first incursion. And then I, there was at that time a gothic fantastic, mostly it was like SFF, but mostly fantastic. And so horror stories, and they were based in Montpellier in France, and they did a huge, big work of unearthing new talents and trying to actually make call for text and actually read the text, which is not the rule. We may talk about that also. How is it in Germany? Like, do people commission people they already know and friends of friends, or do they actually read the text? And most of the time when people actually read the text anonymously, you have way more female authors than when they're publishing, like, are not actually reading the text. So anyways, they did a lot, and a lot of established writers in the SFF scene in France nowadays were of my age, like 50-something, 40-something, were actually started in this publishing house, the small magazine that was called Oxymoron, like the figure style. They started there, and some of my biggest, like oldest friends, they were published also in this literature review. And it was one of the... And also, it was a very inclusive one at the time. The publishers were two females and the husband of one of the two female publishers. And they were very inclusive. And it was new, because at that moment, it was not that inclusive. So I grew up with them. And at some point, I moved to... Yeah, I moved a bit around. And then at some point, I published... So before disappearing, the publisher of this publishing house told me that she wanted to publish a novel that I would have written. And I didn't think of that. I was maybe too humble, or I didn't think I could. But she actually, before disappearing, she is called Léa Silol, and she's the one that actually... I didn't realize that it could have an impact as a novel writer. And so I put everything in place to be able to write novels. And I started as I was still an employee, and I wrote during the weekends. We can talk about that, like a room of your own, but also maybe money of your own, like enough money for women to actually create. And so it was not easy, but I managed to write two novels when I was still an employee. And then I decided to quit my job to be a full-time writer, but only because a female friend of mine, started a new collection of romantasy, basically, and in France, and she was looking for publishers, translators. And I started my translating career with romanticism. It was like, it was a lot of work, but at least it was not, in terms of hours, it was basically like my paid job, but it was less schizophrenic, if I may employ this, a strong word, but it's not what I mean. Schizophrenic is a painful disease, and I'm not... how can you say that? Like, you do not have to reboot your brain. So because I was basically doing Excel tables, and to switch from Excel tables to actually writing is like you have to have a reboot and a reset, and this is very hard. And also, I didn't know I was a neurodivergent. So for me also to let go of the social pressure from work was also very hard. So even if I did work sometimes more in terms of hours, I could easily switch from, okay, I'm finishing the translation and then I take a glass of water and I start writing, and it was feasible and okay. And it gave me also confidence, because when you translate a whole novel, then you know that it's physically, in terms of typing the words, it's like physically you can make it. You can actually write the amount of words necessary to make a novel. And it's also very, for the ego and for the feasibility, it gives you a lot of confidence. So it was, I think, already I was in my 30s, and I stopped being a paid employee. And and then was like, I could actually write more than short stories. I love short stories, and I still love writing them. I'm lucky enough that I receive commissions, maybe not as many as some other colleagues, because we may talk about that. My way of writing is, according to certain readers, demanding. According to some other readers, maybe they are neurodivergent too, fairly easy and immersive. So I have like the two. like, it's either, I do not mean for my language to be difficult, but it seems to be difficult for some people. But it's very poetic and metaphoric. I started writing on novels, and I also discovered in Belgium the magic of radio work. And I've started directing my own radio works, and also dabbling in sounds and making sound designs and field recording. So I expanded a lot time. I had money problems for a while, but in terms of time, I managed to really develop other talents, and so other ways to tell stories that are not necessarily just with words. And that is, I think, also what is happening in France now, that a younger generation is really applying science fiction narratives to other media, and they are very, I feel that nowadays there is a big explosion of science fiction, but it doesn't mean everything for everyone. But it's invading all medias, like game design and game, also video games, but also radio, performative art, contemporary art. It's really all over. It's what I find fascinating. And at first I was like in festivals or conventions, people told me I was the weird one. And from my generation, I suppose I'm still the weird one, even for science fiction readers, because I'm like going all over and trying new things, and I'm never satisfied with just words. But it's more common now that people are doing, for instance, even from my generation, Sabrina Calvo, for instance, is a game designer, a visual artist, and she works with textile, a performative artist, and a writer. And all those universes are linked by science fiction and speculation. So that's me now. I moved recently in Germany. Well, it's recently. There was the pandemic. The pandemic's like kind of stole 3 years of existence, but I settled down in Munich in 2018, at the end of 2018. And I've been living there since then. And I'm still writing novels, short stories, and poetry. I'm still doing music and performative arts. Basically that's where I am now.
Thank you. Very interesting. And Aiki, would you like to lose some words about yourself?
Yes. Thank you, Lubom. For your introduction, there are also a lot of things I, you know, would like to know more about. I'm Aiki, and I write novels like you. For example, the actual one is Proxy, just out now. And I also love to write political essays. I feel rooted in the queer feminist science fiction. And I love short stories like you, Loven. And that's actually how we met for the launch of this publication. We both met in Paris for reading in the launch. And yeah, and I was very happy to meet you. And now to discuss further the French science fiction, the German science fiction.
And that's the reason I invited you, and Aiki and I plan to ask questions and compare maybe a little bit, because Aiki was under the impression that there are some main differences between the German and the French. Yes. Yeah, it seems to be like in Germany that science fiction is a little bit frowned upon. People think, oh no, it's only science fiction, so it's maybe not literary enough, and the quality might be bad, and it's bad language, and it's just action, aliens, and fighting, you know. But that's what I thought for a couple of decades. But then I discovered, no, that's just one small aspect of science fiction, and there's so much more. And it seems to be that in France, the thinking of the people is a little bit different.
Yes, and like Louvain said, I mean, with the poetic approach, you said something like, you want to understand through language, and your language is poetic and metaphoric. And I think this, you know, already, this was also my impression that in France, they actually appreciate when you write science fiction and you work on language. It's not, you know, excluding each other. And what I also found amazing is that the book, I think, Yvonne, you read it as well, Anomaly, won the most prestigious literary prize as a, you know, science fiction book. And I think this could, at the moment, this could not happen in Germany. What do you think, Yvonne?
Well, it's quite interesting and paradoxal, because some, like the old guard of science fiction is paradoxically still feeling discriminated and in the publishing landscape in France, and they still have this kind of grumpy victim behavior that quite paradoxically. So some science fiction writers still think they are discriminated in the landscape. Hervé Le Tellier, for instance, was, and it's true in some, I understand them in some aspect, they're right. Because for instance, Hervé Le Tellier's novel was not classified as science fiction. So the publisher didn't advertise it as a science fiction book, because they were afraid it would lower the sales. So it is still like a filthy genre. So it's not like it's totally accepted, and you can still feel that way, but it changed a lot in the last years, and some of the old guards do not feel that change, or do not want to feel that change, or are even resistant. There is something very odd happening now in the French speaking science fiction world, that there is a part of the fandom and of the publishing words that think that my science fiction and the science fiction that is represented by my publishing houses, I have two main publishers, is too intellectual and political, and that it, science fiction should be political. You know what the, I'm making a lot of air quotes here. Dear listeners, you cannot hear my air quotes, but they are there. And of course, you know the drill. If people say it's too political, it means it's too woke in a way. So, and they feel like, so there is a part of the landscape of the science fiction that is still, that is paradoxically not embracing the new interest, the new political interest in speculative fiction. Not only do they not perceive that, but they are rereading history and they are like, they discard Octavia Butler as a science fiction writer, for instance. Like they just like ignore an whole side of science fiction that has always been political since the very start. And most importantly, I was very shocked that there is a writer from Canada, a Canadian French-speaking writer, or at least I do not know her life, but French writing, science fiction writer, Elisabeth von Arbourg, and she recently wrote an article in one of the main French-speaking literature review, stating that the French continental science fiction was too political. And she was one of the eco-feminist writers from the 70s, so I really don't understand that. I don't get it. I should probably reach out to her, but because I would love to understand more about what she feels. And so there is something happening in science fiction in France with a lot more political speculation. The political situation again in France is really dire. And so maybe the only hope is after the collapse. Like you can feel that a lot of fictions that utopia would be utopias are really far ahead in time, just because it's like the only way you can protect yourself because the short term is really so dire. But yeah, there is a resistance to. To it. A friend of mine, Katie Stewart, she's a science fiction writer. She's born in the French West Indies, so one of our shameful colonies in the Pacific, in the Atlantic Oceans. And she wrote a very interesting essay, long, like a book, about science fiction. And presenting like she reads the actual scene of the French science fiction as a depressed old white man.
Okay.
And she's a clinician, like she's a clinical psychologist, and she specialized in old people, like senior depression. So she knows what she's talking about, and she sees a lot of parallels, because they feel victimized, they don't feel recognized, they don't feel that they received from nowadays enough gratifications, and they feel cancelled. And
it's like a backlash. I mean, we are not so far in Germany. For me, it still sounds amazing that, you know, people say, oh, our French science fiction is too political. So it means you are political.
Exactly.
You know, and you have this backlash where, you know, old people get grumpy or whatever. But in Germany, I don't feel that we are that far. We have political science fiction, but it's like a small movement. I would count the, you know, Yvonne Progressive Fantastic, BSF, these, you know, are movements within the scene, and I think they're kind of welcome, but maybe because they're small and they're not like, you know, so big that people are already saying, oh, we are too political, and you know, we feel now disadvantaged, the established ones. We are not that far. So in a way, I still have the impression that in France the scene is further than when you're already discussing about being, you know, too progressive or too political. In a way, so you know,
yeah, totally. It's like it's a bliss to be trolled. You know, that you it's true. It's I totally agree. But it's like it was mostly for this question of being respected or not in the publishing realm in general. And I have no clues about that. But I still, again, Hervé Le Tellier was not marketed as science fiction. at all and is not published by science fiction publishing houses.
It wasn't advertised as science fiction in Germany either.
Yeah.
But we still found the book.
Of course.
We science fiction.
And we do. And it was quite funny because the science fiction world is small and big, like as you said, Aiki compared maybe to Germany, it's like it's huge. Like we know each other. Mm-hmm. We have many conventions and we know each other. And it's really funny because at some point I was looking for a friend of mine who is designing RPGs that is like actually pen and paper RPGs, and he created a mythology. He's called Thomas Meunier. He created a whole mystical Lovecraftian mythology of his own, but it's in a very open universe. There's a lot of other people are contributing to this universe. It's like real RPG, so it's like everything you love about pen and paper role-playing game. And I was looking for him because he made an adaptation of one of my book, Agrafa, in his universe. Like he made a room for my novel in his universe. And I was at a convention in Nantes. It's like the main convention of science fiction in France in terms of visitors. Like it's huge. I personally feel oppressed there because of my neurodivergence, and it's really crowded by people. And I was looking for him, and I actually thought that Hervé Le Tellier was him, and I didn't know it was Hervé Le Tellier. So I waved at him like, "Hey, Thomas!" And then I was like, "Oh my God, I have no idea who you are. Sorry, I'm looking for another friend." And then some other people. It's typical that he's not even known in the fandom. Like we do not know this guy. I thought it was Thomas, my friend. And then afterwards I saw him in a round table, like a podium discussion. I was like, oh, that's probably why I didn't know him, because he's not mingling with science fiction fan.
And he doesn't usually write science fiction.
He does not.
Well, so that's what I thought as well, that he's not really like a science fiction writer, but you know, a literary writer who writes also science fiction.
Like Ishiguro, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I personally love that they do that. I understand the frustration of traditional science fiction publishers, because of course they would love to have, they think for good reasons that the novels they publish are more state of the art, more like interesting, because it's, we've been thinking about science fiction and reading and examining our own. So, of course, what we write is, I want to say, better than what Hervé Le Tellier proposed, because we have so many, we're not as, like, I don't know, naive about science fiction that because we talk about it. And so it's, of course, I can feel the frustration that this is mainstream science fiction and they consider they published more interesting fictions, and of course they got more money, but that's the way publishing. I have no opinion on publishing world. It's for me, it's marketing, it's capitalism. I have no idea how that works. It's for me, it's mostly luck, and I'm not frustrated against the market. It's not something that it's like the weather. How can you be frustrated?
But it's very interesting what you said, because we have the same in Germany, that you have, you know, science fiction like being in the scene, thinking about the tradition of science fiction and, you know, being part of this endless dialogue and knowing about, for example, Octavia Butler and, you know, all the, you know, the grandmothers of science fiction, and then trying to add something to the dialogue. And then you have also now coming, I realized in, for example, also competitions and stuff, that they are coming people from the literary scene who don't write science fiction, but they realize like, oh, it's a hot topic, like AI, and, you know, also science fiction story can be a hot topic in a competition. So they come maybe from the outside, but in a way, I think this is also a sign about, you know, how big science fiction is, that, you know, people from the literary scene also are interested in the topics of science fiction. And maybe when they come, they also think about the traditions, like where does it actually come from? And, you know, what is, like, for example, the feminist tradition of science fiction, all this. So, you know, I'm very happy, you know, when people come from, even then they write maybe different science fiction, but it's still, you know, I think it talks about, it says a lot about science fiction.
Yeah, and it's true that if It's very paradoxical because if you complain that you're, you know, in one side of the society and you're not visible enough, for me, you should be happy that you have some opening and some interest, even if, as you say, sometimes the interests are not genuine. They are more about let's make money with AI or whatever. But I'm personally very happy when every time there is a newcomer, because it becomes a bit. From my generation, we all know each other, and it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit embarrassing sometimes. Like, we know about everybody's divorce and that this person had cancer. And it's like we're gossiping a lot. And I'm not I'm not really that much into the scene. I realized as I cannot really go to conventions, I cannot really be part. Because of my neurodivergence, it's not like I'm going in conventions a lot, so I cannot drop names like some of my colleagues can. So it's not like but it's still it's quite interesting that it's true that the scene is opening up. Some people are resisting, but as you said, it means that it's opening to new ideas and new forces. And when it in terms of feminism, we have the same trend in France than in Germany. Like the rediscovery, it's so annoying and embarrassing that the female authors, we constantly have to rediscover them. Mm. Like we rediscover them every 10 years. it's so sad. But anyways, so there is an interest and there is a real trend in queer trans feminist science fiction, big interest and also big revival, and just like in Germany, new translations being made of Joanna Russ and the like, and Ursula Le Guin always been big in France, but she was basically the only one from that generation. Octavia Butler was translated in the beginning of the century by Le Diable Vauvert, so all in 2000, like she had maybe two, but it's like for me it doesn't. I'm 50, so for me it doesn't. It's quite recent, but it's not. It's like 25 years ago she was translated into French, so that's she has she was well known. But Ursula Le Guin was translated. Right, like 5 years after being published in the States. So she's well known and she's part of my history, like my apprenticeship of science fiction. And the feminist part is, it's true, we have more and more female authors. But also we had very important, and that they are still living, very important figures of the, we still have important figures from the 60s, 70s, like from the second wave of feminists. We still have, for instance,
Catherine Dufour.
Catherine Dufour is only 10 years my elder, but she's an important figure. It's totally important figure. I was looking for Joëlle Ventrebert is also is more from Ursula Le Guin's generation, and she wrote those typical 70s stories, utopias, science fiction utopias with in the 70s, a lot of utopias were dealing about care, benevolence, resilient communities. They were dealing with telepathy, empathy. So it was something drastic in the 70s. And she wrote one of those novels. And also Elisabeth Vonaburg, actually. And she also wrote one of those seminal stories about matriarchy. And so we, not only did we translate those like seminal feminist texts, but we also produced in the French-speaking world similar narratives about understanding and peace and pacifist stories. And it's so that's important. And also, like one of the our Mary Shelley that is only discovered now that I didn't grow up with, because she was really fighting with the science fiction fandom and community in the 60s, 70s. And nowadays she's rediscovered, air quotes, but she's always been there. She's always been in the fandom. So not like Hervé Le Tellier aside, writing science fiction, but she was actually writing science fiction, going to conventions and writing in specialized magazine. She was Françoise Daubonne. And she's actually, she was friend with Simone de Beauvoir. She was very active. She was one of the co-founder of the MLF. She fought for abortion rights. So one of those, you know, proud mothers of us. And she wrote science fiction, like actual science fiction, like pulp fiction science fiction, but feminist. And she actually was the one that crafted the term ecofeminism in 74 in a pamphlet that was called Being Feminist or Die or something like that.
Yeah, so you have this French science fiction feminist tradition that's really cool from the 70s.
But it was pushed under the carpet for some reason, because when I read science fiction in the 80s, 90s, I couldn't find those person. They didn't come to me naturally. So the scene managed to kind of get rid of them, to stay between, you know, this boys club of very depressed males. So somehow, but Joëlle Vietenberg was always been part of the boys club for some reason. She was still there, and she's still there. And she really somehow resisted. Maybe she was not as radical feminist as Françoise Daubonne. But she was part of the landscape, and she is still now. So some figures resisted, but Françoise Daubonne totally disappeared for some reason. And some women that wrote at that time, I found them, they stopped. They were not encouraged. And I discovered them again, because they wrote in literature reviews at that moment.
I'm missing that a lot. I don't know about you, Yvonne, but I can't think of German feminist science fiction writer from the 70s. I mean, maybe they are so buried that we have to dig really deep to find them, or I'm not sure if they existed, if it just was more male dominated in Germany, or
I am also under the impression that most female or non-binary authors emerged in this century and not before, but that might be a knowledge gap of mine. I think there were Perry Rhodan female authors longer ago, not only in this century, but also their number have grown in this century, especially during the last 5 to 10 years. I think we had Gudrun Pausewang.
Yes.
And she was more a children author.
And more
But really good, like writing about nuclear dangers.
Yeah.
And I really don't know the expressions in English, but about nuclear war and accidents and nuclear power plants. And these books were really famous, and she also won an award. I think there was a second woman winning an award in the last century, but maybe not more.
And Gudrun Pausewang, Die Wolke, The Cloud, it is also a book, you know, which is read in schools. So it's, you know, very well known. And I think people don't associate it with science fiction. But
I didn't either. Yeah.
But it's like, how would you present Die Wand?
I read that like last year. The novel Die Wand, and I really liked it, and I think it's science fiction, but it wasn't really marketed under the label science fiction, and people have different opinions if it's science fiction or not, because it's never explained and it's just how it is, and it could be something else happening, that she's almost alone. But yeah, for me it's science fiction, and I don't need science fiction to explain why it's like this. I like it. If it's not explained, it's fine for me.
Especially it's for me, it's like very clearly science fiction also because of the context. It was the Cold War. So it's a speculation on the expected apocalypse. So it's science fiction is also linked to its time. So you can decide this was a political fable if it was maybe something written in the 17th century. Maybe you would say, oh, that's not science fiction, it's a fable. Or an allegory or a religious symbol or whatever. But it was the Cold War.
And thing what is also missing for me is to think in a European tradition. I mean, we can think about the national tradition, like, you know, what happened in Germany. And then the next thing we look at in Germany, especially, is to the USA. You already said it, Ursula K. Le Guin, Octavia Butler. They are well received here. They, you know, they are like role models, like, you know, important for, especially for female authors writing science fiction. I think they are, you know, very important. But what's missing is this European tradition, like what happened in Europe all these years. And what you said about France and ecofeminism, I also associate ecofeminism with France, and I think it's very interesting. And I would love, you know, to have read these books. You mentioned all the authors from the 70s, these feminist French science fiction authors. I would love, you know, to have read them and had them part of my formation and or apprenticeship as a writer. And, you know, this European tradition, you know, to think about science fiction as also a European project and what happened in all the countries. And maybe there's something, you know, similar or bringing us together or whatever, you know, this is really missing. And maybe this is, you know, our project to do.
Yeah, but it's true that even the British authors are, when it comes to the Cold War, for instance, Anna Cavan was a British author. Okay, she lived in the US, but her Snow Cold, I don't know how it was translated or if it was translated, she wrote a novel about nuclear winter. It's very poetic, very weird. It's a woman travel, like a woman, clearly different woman, person, running in the wrong direction because everybody is trying to find asylum and refuge in the south or north, can't remember. Well, they are moving in one direction and she's moving towards the impact or towards the cold. And a man is following her. So that's basically the story. And it's totally apocalyptical and very interesting. And she was a British person. So I'm convinced that we had other fears, for instance, and the Cold War was something important for us. And that explains how we deal with apocalypse now. Apocalypse now, oh my God, no pun intended. and it must be different from the US. They were not that close. I mean, they had their own fears, but we were really in between, like the middle, at least median Europe, middle Europa. Anyways, it's something that is interesting. But it's true that we do not translate. I feel it's a pity that we do not know. We cannot. Yeah, it's a general. It's a general thought that in Europe we do not know each other and we cannot learn from our mistakes and we cannot, we're just like alone in our traumas, even if the traumas are shared, we do not share them. And that's a problem that we can see today also, that even in our political choices. Like France was a big rehearsal for Germany, and you get the feeling that I've tried to talk about the political situation in France, but we're still, I don't know. It's in general for the, it's missing in the European project. In it's true. And the science fiction, like sharing our, I know nothing about science fiction in Spain and Italy, nothing. And they're our neighbors, and they do have their speculation school, but they are not proposed, like they are not offered in translation.
Yeah. I mean, we are lucky that with Austria, we don't have the language barrier. So I think there's a lot of exchange and, you know, reading each other with Austrian authors. But already Swiss is missing for me. I mean, it's a little bit exchange. But then, you know, the French part, I don't know. Maybe you know more about it. But there are lots of holes on my map, which, you know, I don't know anything about it. But I also think we have new technologies. For example, we have apps where you can translate immediately. So when, for example, we met in person and, you know, I met you in Paris, this was also for me an initiative to then, you know, I also had an email exchange with a blogger and he told me about, for example, Bifrost, the magazine. So I could, you know, look a little bit. And with Google Translate, I could actually read things like what's happening there and, you know, found about new authors I would love to read. They're not translated yet, but, you know, maybe there can be ways to come together in a way, you know, when first you meet in person and then, you know, things can happen from there. You know, you have some names in your head and you know where to look, because at the beginning, you don't know where to look at all. You have no idea where to start. And yeah.
Yeah, and there's a will, for instance, my publisher understands German or talks German, Matthias Echner mm-hmm. from La Volte, and he's very curious, like he wants to know more, but he's translating from already Evangelisti, I think, from, oh my God, I will. So he translated from Italian and from fiction from Italian and from Italy, sorry, and from the Spanish world. For instance, Gorodisha, and Angelica Gorodisha, she's an Argentinian author. The same generation, she died recently, the same generation as, maybe not just, yeah, anyways, an old one, an ancient one. and so they translated her in La Volte, which is really interesting. They translated also, which also was quite unexpected for me. I didn't know that she wrote science fiction, which will come back to me. Doris Lessing wrote a series.
Yes.
They've been translated. The first volume was translated in France when it appeared, but then not the rest. And the rest was very recently translated by my publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know in Germany if all the series were published at that time or not.
Yeah, what you said earlier also this, you know, that now everyone is interested in science fiction writer and what they think about topics. I have the feeling that, you know, it's a similar situation in Germany as well. And this also, in a way, makes me optimistic that, you know, science fiction is, you know, gaining more appreciation, that people are actually asking science fiction writer on podiums to discuss, you know, things like what's happening now in our world. And I think, you know, this makes me very optimistic. And in a way, I feel that, you know, and also what you said about, you know, queerness and transfeminism, you know, also being in science fiction and, you know, there's something happening. Yeah, I mean, last year was very optimistic. This year, when I look at the political situation and, you know, what's happening everywhere, I feel like maybe this is going to turn as well. You know, there's going to be a pushback, but we will see. But in a way, with science fiction in general, I have, I feel that, you know, things, you know, are opening up and that science fiction is, you know, becoming very relevant for society. What do you think?
About the situation in Germany or in general?
About in France, like, do you have similar ones that, you know, science fiction is something relevant for society?
It is, and it's very dangerous too, because there is an interest, but not always good intention interest.
Mm-hmm.
So you have also a lot of greenwashing science fiction. So, for instance, at some point, I was commissioned a text that was supposed to be published in a left-wing newspaper. Simple words are the worst. But actually, at the very last minute, I decided not to take part of it because it was basically paid, like all the publicities, like the ads, were only ads for Veolia, which is basically the nuclear plant king in France. So they were trying to to have a good conscience in paying for some, yeah, ecological, eco-feminist things. So the greenwashing is big. Like, they try to have a good conscience and they try to use us for that. And also there is an actual mere, but it's a good sign for science fiction. there is a battle of narratives in France happening. That is, I was told the same happened in the 80s under Reagan in the United States, where the army actually recruited some science fiction writers, like obviously right-wing science fiction writers, to actually help them speculate. And they call this, they even call them, like they have a name, they have a code names. Writers have code names. So some are real writers we know, like we know who they are. And some decided to have code names for the fandom not to know who they were. And they actually are called the Red Team. And they're writing for the army. And I was invited at Luma in Arles for a podium discussion about science fiction. And they were invited to, for some reason, because they wanted to have, how do you say that, a political spectrum, the wider possible. And I was really, it's a catastrophe, the way they see they present the future. It's like everything that is serving the interest of the right wing. So this is very, it's great that people are interested in science fiction, but it's really hard. Like, we do have to fight with our own narratives. And the noise of science fiction nowadays in France is so loud that everybody, like every political sides, is trying to be louder than the other.
But that's so interesting, but we don't have it in Germany. So it really means that in France, science fiction is so big that, you know, it's not a project of a small group, you know, where you know what's going on, but it's like big and you have like the whole spectrum of the political from left to right. I mean, that's very, very interesting. What you also said with the noise, that it's so loud that, you know, everyone, it's like competing with different futures, like more racist futures and feminist futures, you know, coming together. It's very interesting.
I hope it will be translated. It's a short novel from a woman called Audrey Plenet. She wrote a space opera, a bit like Becky Chambers. It's in a spaceship and people live in symbiosis. All the species live together in peace. And then suddenly, and it's also linked to they live in symbiosis, but you have like two sides that are suddenly fighting, basically the specist who wants like a pure species and the symbiosis party and that are for more mingling race and species. And it's basically the two projects of society, like the fear of great replacement and the supremacist theories are fighting against like the more inclusive progressive side. So she's a progressive person and she wrote a space op really presenting those two trends of society. But other than that, you have a lot of different utopias, and we created with some friends a collective that is trying to disimprison. It's a neologism. The word doesn't exist in French. Like, to free the futures, so that we do not feel trapped in the futures, and we tried new ways. And basically, it's really hard to make. Like, we are too old. I suppose we are already too old to work on that project. It's very difficult to see a bright future, and it's really hard for us to do so. And the younger generation manages to do that more easily. Like, they're more, but us, the old people, like the 50 somethings, I personally need to go very far in the future. I have to, or parallel dimensions, but I cannot really speculate on the future. Every time I'm asked, Like, can you imagine Grenoble, the city it was a commission in 2020? I don't know. According to the report of the, you know, the official report about climate change, not much. I do not expect much of this city. It will be like totally hot and unlivable. And what do you want me to imagine? It's,
yeah.
I don't want to imagine that. Look at the maps. There is actual computer simulations. And I was asked also recently to, not me personally, I received a call for text about tourism in Brittany in 100 years. But in 100 years, according to the simulations, Brittany will be basically an archipelago of islands, overpopulated. And you want me to think about the tourism? You should fend off tourists already. It's like you have too much people already and you will have less and less land. What do you want me to... I cannot... It's like, you know, sometimes I think that people go to us like when you read the horoscope, you have a bad feeling about something and you just like try to read the cards or the horoscope to see if maybe you're wrong. Like, please tell me that it's not that bad. And yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, what this call for utopias, we definitely have it in the German science fiction scene as well at the moment. I see there Yvonne is, you know, nodding her head because that's a big topic at the moment, utopias. We want more utopias. And I think basically it means like help us, give us, you know, positive futures, give us solutions. And it's very difficult, I mean, to find these solutions. But I think it's what you said, it's all very interesting, especially with the that you have the right fringe part already, you know, doing science fiction. I don't think we have it in Germany yet. We have maybe, you know, conservative more science fiction, but it's not going into, you know, radicalism or, you know, total racism. That's not there yet. Maybe it's coming.
No, it's not an issue. We only have the usual lack of awareness. That's what we have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, like, they don't do it on purpose. It's just a lack of awareness. And they're usually nice people, but they haven't checked their own privileges and stuff. And they're always right about maybe white male, cis, hetero man, but without meaning any bad. It's just that. But I am not aware of any really white wing.
Yeah, and we don't have this polarization we have in politics, for example, between right and left. We don't feel at the moment we have it in science fiction, like what you're saying. But with these utopias and give us, you know, better solutions, that's, you know, what they want from us, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's
the word utopia, I think, also is problematic. But when you dig deeper, it's basically, you know, giving, you know, trying to think constructive and thinking about solutions. And I have now a project with schools in Hamburg where we are working with, you know, young people. And I'm very excited to see, you know, how they have to think about utopias. And in the end, there has to be a play, like a theater play. And I'm very excited to work with them because, you know, what you said, I think it also makes a difference, you know, how old are you, what you're expecting from the future, all these things. And yeah, I'm very excited to see what, you know, young people, if they can come up with utopias, because I also think it's very difficult, what you just said, to think about, you know, utopias right now.
Yeah, most of the time, the only thing I can think of is utopias that are actually uchronies. Mm-hmm. Like if we would have taken another path.
Mm-hmm.
Or something really dire happens, for instance, and that's already Joanna Russ wrote about that in one of her short stories, Homecoming. Like she writes the short stories is brilliant. It starts in a bright future where everybody is happy and everybody's clever and beautiful. And it's totally polygamous and we can teleport from one place to the other. So it's like maximum freedom. And she wrote that in the 70s, 68. But it's like, it's so, like she puts all the menu, like by the menu, everything that everything utopist as the society of the 70s could think of. And then suddenly one character comes and she's like us. Like basically she's a normal, she doesn't, mm-hmm. she's not that an intellectual, so she doesn't understand the jokes, and she's a bit embarrassing for the groups. Like, she's this non-bright guest in a perfect party, and she's just like, and they try to include her, but she's not really happy. She's like normally happy, sometimes grumpy. She's basically us. And it's people really try, you know, to welcome her in this future, but they can't. It's like at the end of the story, then they give up on her because you're spoiling our nice future.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to try to speculate is sometimes like a joke, but it makes us also think about our present too. It means what do we want to keep from the present, or do we want? Yeah. Anyways, this story, why everybody's happy is because basically humanity was erased. So there is so few people left that they live in good intelligence with each other. So sometimes when I think of utopias, I'm thinking of something really drastic that would change, not like killing people, but that would change drastically. Like a new species come, or aliens come, or, you know, something so disruptive.
Yeah.
Or people become all mute, or so disruptive that it gives a real tabula rasa, like we were hoping it would happen with COVID, but it didn't. Not again, not the amount of people dead, but the restart, or, you know, and so sometimes,
yes, or to think about really small things like micro utopias, where, you know, little things are happening, like guerrilla gardening, and then also maybe changing our attitude. What you said is really interesting, like this person from the now, I mean, he or she couldn't adjust in the future, even if it was a, you know, a very happy future. But if you don't change yourself, you know, you won't be part of it. And attitude to say, yeah, maybe a compromise is already utopian in a way. When you think about it, how diverse we are, how different and how many different opinions, just to, you know, to have a compromise is actually maybe the most utopian thing of our times. And we don't celebrate it enough. We always think about, oh, this is, you know, we are losing. But actually, it's, you know, it's the best maybe we can do when we are so different and so polarized, to come to a compromise is, you know, our little utopia, and just to change, you know, our attitude. And maybe that's for the next generations to, you know, to actually implement it and change it. And maybe, you know, we are already too old to live in a utopia. Even before.
So maybe that would be a nice end of the nice last thought of this interview, because we usually shouldn't extend the hour so much, because the audience then runs away. But there is nothing that can hinder us to meet again. And maybe then compare some numbers or so.
Yeah, sure. And give some resources. I could also send texts and also, yeah, I have some names for French readers that could also be interesting, even if the books are not translated. Some are translated into English, I think. They are the older ones, like Pollen, and so that could be also interesting. To read some stuff as you wanted to at the first, and to compare numbers. I've managed to have the numbers, so I could give you also numbers.
Yeah, let's make your book smaller.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you a lot for joining me today and speak about the French and the German science fiction scene. It was very interesting. We will surely talk again about it. And then have a nice time until next time.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. And thank you.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Bye.